Hello and welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. My name is still Paul Madat. Thank you again for taking the time to join me on this episode. Today I have Bradley Pastor. He is Vice President, North America Sales at Risk Methods, coming to us from Beantown. Am I doing Boston a disservice by saying that? Is that like a tourist thing? You guys hate that term, Bradley? Talk to me.
No. I think it's on point. We are Beantown. You could call us Titletown. That works well. So either Beantown or Titletown, both are good.
I think we just lost every listener in New York and everywhere else in the world when you dropped Titletown there. So listen, thanks so much for being here. Say hi to everybody and provide a quick intro and then we'll get into it.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. As Paul indicated, Bradley Pastor, Vice President of North American Sales for Risk Methods. We're based out of Boston, and I've been here for a little under a year and a half.
Okay. Married, father, both?
Absolutely. Yeah, all those things. So I'm happily married for 21 years. I have three children, a senior daughter, so a senior in high school. I have a eighth grade daughter. That'd be middle school. And then I have a third grader son.
All right. Well, you're busy.
And a dog and two cats.
Literally a dog and two cats as well?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. We don't have the picket fence, but there's always room for that.
Do you have a pickup truck?
I wish. I have a little sedan.
Got it. All right. Well, listen, Bradley, let's get into it. I want to talk to you about 2020 and how we've been able to navigate this a little bit here. But let's go back a little bit in time and let's get ready to share your story. You ready to roll?
Yes.
All right. 93, Clark University, BA, Government International Relations. That has VP North America Sales written all over it, doesn't it?
It does. They're tightly aligned.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let's go back to those early days in the 90s. I know that you continued on with your MPA, Public Administration, graduated with that in 96. But talk to me about the early to mid 90s when you were starting your career. What do you recall thinking you'd be doing? What was your vision back then? Or did you have one?
Right. I think we all have a vision when you come out of college or university, either your friends, your parents, or the market. And you're like, oh boy. So I've been in school. So for me, I had been in school for 7 years. I worked, I actually rode crew during both undergraduate and graduate and continued to take school. My initial plan was to go into elder advocacy. So that was working with seniors, doing lobbying. And I thought that was a reasonable path because my sister, who's 4 years older, was head of a Alzheimer's dementia unit. And she had tons of more work than she could possibly handle. And the senior age group continued to increase. And you look at, now I'm in sales, but at any point, what do? You look at the market and you size it and you say, here's where there's opportunities. I should go look in that area. What I found was the roles that were available weren't aligned with what I was interested in. So I received a job offer at a local health provider insurance company for $19,000 a year to go sell life insurance to seniors, which just seems to be not great alignment in terms of
like
the
jumbo
market.
Shrimp, right? Like really?
Oh yeah, totally. So I'm going to go sell life insurance. This wasn't elder, this didn't have anything to do with quality of care insurance. This was literally your, 15 years left, in your life. Right. And I'm going to go sell you life insurance. It just, I had a lot of issues with that. So one of my friends was working tech support at a small technology company by the name of Watermark Software in Burlington, Massachusetts. And he said, you seem to be technically astute. How about you come and interview to work in tech support? And I said, okay, sure. So I went and interviewed, aced the interview, got my first job offer for making $32,000 a year working in tech support. I got to show up in shorts. We had pool table, ping pong, margarita Thursdays. I mean, it was, thought I was living a dream in terms of that. And that started me down the path of working in technology.
Well, Mardi Gras with a massive raise and a pretty decent environment that you're in.
I know. It was exciting.
And so when was this? Late 90s?
This was probably, let me see. So I finished my BA in 93. I got the job a little bit towards the end of my master's. So maybe 96, 97.
Okay. So 96, 97, new direction for you. You're happy with it. You know, I'm certainly old enough to remember that time as well. There was a lot going on. The dot-com bubble was happening. There was all kinds of interest in internet stocks and things like that. And then the bubble kind of hit. And then you fast forward a little bit into 2001 and September 11th and the impact that had on the world. So talk to me about your first, call it 4 to 5 years in this new career, because a lot was going on at the time.
Right. So where I eventually wound up going, and it was a ziggy-zaggy path, and it's a lot when people say, how did you get where you are? And I said, you know, I don't prescribe to life being a straight line. Life is ziggy-zaggy, and the people who I find the most interesting, most compelling stories are people whose lives zigzag, and zigzag sometimes goes backwards as well, right? So I had a variety of different functional roles, individual contributor roles, alliances. I was a sales engineer. I ran sales engineering teams. I was an account executive, went to club, won the Rolex, did the dance. And what I realized was what I really enjoyed doing was the coaching, mentoring, leading, owning side of it. So then the question is, how do you move into management? How do you get there? And what I was able to do was parlay a role working in OEM business development for a company by the name of Systinet. And that's a weird story in itself, because I got hired when it was Systinet. When I started, they had been acquired by Mercury Interactive. And then by the time 6 months into Mercury, we were acquired by Hewlett Packard.
Wow. What a transition.
Yeah. So I went from small company. The CEO at the time was Tom Erickson, who ran and grew Acquia to the monster billion-dollar valuation acquisition company is now. Developed tons of great relationships inside there. But the rate of change and how quickly that organization moved was very fast. And what I liked about that role was it was traditional business development in terms of working with partners and trying to find relationships. The really interesting aspect of it was we were tied directly to revenue. So it was find a partner, get them to OEM, embed our technology, and sell and drive. And it was on the basis of the success that we had there, licensing out our technology to companies like Oracle and BEA and TIBCO, that when I left HP, there was a small company in between, but then I went eventually and joined Autonomy, which randomly enough got acquired by HP as well. But I joined Autonomy running their OEM sales team.
Bradley, do you recall a thought around wanting to work for an enterprise global company? Did you think your preference would be more mid-size, more startup? What was your ideal state if you had your magic wand, you know, back in the day?
I didn't know. And to some extent now, I still don't know. You know, I'm at the point of my career where I look for opportunities. I looked and really enjoy what I do at Risk Methods. You asked, and the preceding question was around the September 11th and the market falling and all those aspects of it. And when I think back to those periods of time, it was really the relationships I had with people, less the companies. So I've worked for some companies that you talk to people and they're like, wow, oh my gosh, how could you have ever left that company? And then you get the flip side, oh my gosh, how could you have ever worked for that company? And when I really look back on it, it's, well, I didn't work for such and such. I worked for Harold Collette, or I worked for Tom Erickson, or I worked with Len Capozzi. And that's the way that I look at those relationships. A good friend of mine, Jake Sroffman, I worked for him at one company and with him at two other companies. So I think back, and when I look at the companies, I look at those periods of time. I look at September 11th, flying to meet my peer Rob Doherty in New Jersey. We were both flying. I was flying during September 11th while it was going on, and then traveling back with Rob from New Jersey back to Massachusetts.
Driving, so, you must have.
Yeah, well, we did. And it was a very, very long drive and very emotional. We were extraordinarily fortunate given the day and certainly what happened. But I look back and it's something where, and I stay in constant touch with Rob anyways, we're still friends, but you know, every September 11th, it's, hey, do you remember? And he's like, yep, you know, I was here and you were flying in and this is what we're doing. So I look at my career as the relationships of people, not so much actually the companies.
So, Brad, let's talk about relationships then, because your decision to move into leadership, management, that mm-hmm. type of engagement, vastly different than an individual contributor. You can be a great top-performing salesperson and a lousy average leader, and you can Absolutely. Be an average salesperson, you know, kind of bobbing above water, just staying afloat, and you can be a dynamic leader, coach, manager, engaging person. And so what was behind the decision to move into leadership? Was it just, well, this is what I should be doing, or was there a real passion for it? And what was kind of the magnet there?
Well, admittedly, I think my initial thoughts around it were, hey, this would be fun. And
fun. All right.
I know. Wait, is this still on? No. So I thought it was fun. And you hear that from a lot of people. So when you're a sales engineer, you think the AE role is better. When you're the AE, you think the VP of sales role is better. When you're the VP of sales, you're like, oh, I want to be the CEO. And what you really realize is, no, you want to be an investor. You know, you don't want any of that. And I looked and I said, wow, I'd love to be part of those meetings. And I'd love to be the person that comes in and works the deal. And I'd love to do this and do that. And from the exterior perspective, all those things were exciting. What you don't appreciate is all the hard work that goes into making those things enjoyable. And over time, what I realized, and my realization was over a short period of time, mind you, was what I really enjoyed doing is seeing people be successful. I really enjoy coaching and mentoring organizations. And I love moving, whether I'll define it as things. So that could be an organization, a sales team, to a further point than where they were. And that could be interpersonally. So I've worked with people who I've promoted, who went from being a business development rep who, you know, one, she now is a director of a group running software. And you look back and you say, yes, her talent and skills put her in that position. Yet I was a person who was able to help lift them up from the world they are. And I look at those things and I go, wow, that's really what I enjoy doing. So I like getting in the weeds. So mm-hmm. working deals, understanding that. I also like setting a strategy, executing it. And I don't mind owning hopefully the success and, you know, hopefully the little bit of failure that comes with it. Cause what you realize over time is that it is that combination, right? It's that ziggy zaggy. So there is going to be success and there's going to be failure along the way. And you talk about what's your intention has to be long-term. You have to look out and say good days, bad days, yeah. But what's your intention? So where I work now, my intention is to continue to grow and build a world-class organization here in Boston where people want to come and work and personally they can fulfill their personal goals and expectations, whether those are financial or professional. And if those things, we achieve them, I'll achieve my goals, right? Yeah. And at the end, we'll all feel that we've gotten something out of it.
You know, as we're talking about your career here, if I can link one word to it, I think acquisition seems to be a word in the mid part of your career here. So if I have this right, Sitescape acquired by Novell, Mercury yep. acquired by HP, you're at Just Systems, and then I think you were at Autonomy, which was part of HP as well. And so during those stretches, any times, Bradley, where you found yourself out of work, were you ever in that spot or did you always just transition on? And what were those changes like for you?
Well, it's sort of funny because I never got out of work until I moved into management roles. So I look back, so Just Systems, the Japanese parent company pulled out of the US. So I had to quickly find another role and that parlayed into Autonomy. Hmm. Autonomy, I left and went to another company and quite frankly, it wasn't a good fit. And 4 months later, I was out looking for something else. Fortunately, within a week, I joined another organization. I left that one of my own choosing and joined Harold Collette, who was my boss at Autonomy at Bloomberg. And I was at Bloomberg for 4.5 years. Bloomberg, great company to work for, New York based. And part of the culture with a New York based organization is at that point in time, Mike Bloomberg wanted everyone to come back and work at 731 Lexington. So I happened to be in Boston, working out of their Boston office, though there were people who worked on Park Avenue. There were people who worked on Third Avenue who had to move from those locations back to the Lexington. It impacted around 300 people worldwide, primarily in the U.S. And so they said you could relocate to New York. And to their credit, they offered a very generous package to reload to New York. But as we opened it up, my wife works. She's a lawyer, you know, kids in school, et cetera. I wasn't going to pack up the dog and two cats and move to New York.
So if you had a pickup truck, maybe, right?
That's the thing. I needed the pickup truck and I just didn't have it. So see me driving through Midtown with the pickup truck exactly. And the dog hanging out the window.
Nice Dodge Ram right through Madison, right?
That'd have been awesome. So I said no, you know, and I didn't go. And I started looking and I joined a company by the name of RSAM that was based in New Jersey. And my friend Jake, who I mentioned a couple of times, I'd worked with the gentleman who was the CRO, Bill Dietrich. And so Bill tangentially knew me. And so I reached out, I had an interview. Interestingly enough, I actually lost the opportunity. They passed on me and I, you know, I fought my way back in and got hired and stayed with RSAM. RSAM was absolute great run, great relationships there. A guy, Gary Napotnick, who ran our marketing, Bill, awesome, fantastic boss. And we got acquired by ACL out of Vancouver. And stayed for several months. And I knew as soon as we got acquired, and I knew even going into the acquisition process, because part of the management team, we knew that we were going to get more funding or get acquired, and getting acquired one, that my tenure would be short. And even when I interviewed, they said, this is the plan for the company, right? We're looking to be acquired or we're looking to get more money. And sometimes even being in management, when you get more money, that sometimes means that they want a change in leadership, right? So I knew it would be short-lived, though the opportunity was very exciting. The opportunity to work with Bill was absolutely compelling. Stayed on for a period of time, worked the transition with ACL, and then once again, I was looking for another opportunity. And so I joined Risk Method. So I think, what did I count there? Maybe 3 or 4 times that I've been out and looking, and it's absolutely nerve-wracking and scary and unsettling. And I have a long laundry list of success, though you still will sit there and be like, is anyone ever going to hire me?
You know, it's funny that you say that, because I think back to my career, and as you're speaking, I'm taking my timeline. The times that when you were through 2 to 3 different companies in the mid 2000s, I worked at Xerox for about 10 years. And okay. I had multiple roles within the same company. I moved with the company as well. But when I decided to leave the organization at the end of 2010, that was a really big decision for me, and that was my choice. But it was a hard decision because, you know, you have a long runway with the company. Nobody's kicking you out. It's a safer play on paper, you know, work for a global organization, et cetera, et cetera. But I remember joining the company. When I did, I was fired from a previous job, and that was gut-wrenching for me. I had no money at the time. I didn't know what I was going to do. And then my decision to leave Xerox was elective, but that was still challenging as well, because I'm now going to be self-employed doing my own thing. And I'm curious about something for you, Bradley. When I did this, when both of those scenarios happened to me, when I was fired and when I started up my own business, I was single, like totally on my own. I had nobody to answer to, just myself. And so here you are going through these scenarios. You just touched on gut-wrenching and nerve-wracking. You're also responsible for, well, 3 pets and 3 kids, right?
Right. It's, look, I have a couple different points of perspective on it, because one of the things that people don't talk about in management, part of the responsibility is hiring and firing people. So I know from a personal perspective, my wife will tell the story of one of the organizations where, you know, I got called in and the CEO calls me into the office and there's a red folder on the desk. And I know what the red folder is, right? And he's like, hey, you know, hey, we should have never hired a VP of sales. You know, we weren't right size. You know, hey, sorry, but here's your severance, right? And that was after 4 months. And so I called her up and I said, hey, guess what happened? Right. And she said that she's at CVS, I think it was one of the drugstores around here. And she said, okay. And she put back whatever she was buying on the shelf, you know, and we met for a cup of coffee. And I got to tell you, a lot of sleepless nights and little shortness of breath. And what the hell have I done? And it's something that I take with me, and I don't, when people have to be let go or you have to make management changes, whether it happens to me, right, or whether it's as a result of organization changes, I do take those things seriously. I like to look at it, or at least believe it's from the perspective that you're ultimately doing what's best for the company and you have other roles and responsibilities there. And I look at it that if there was a change that needed to be done to me, for example, so ACL, I'm not going to move to Vancouver.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't look at it personally. They acquired us. They want to run up there. Laura, the CEO, is running a great company. It's well within her right to look at it. And I also look at the social contract, where if you're a salesperson and you're not producing, that's part of your social contract. Almost without exception, I'm thinking here for a minute, the people that I know that have moved on, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, they're all in better roles and doing well for themselves. So I take some comfort in that, but it is, if you've never been fired, part of me says, don't have it happen. The flip side though is you build that resilience and you know that, okay, I'll get it done, you know, and that's, and fortunately, as I indicated, as I opened up, I mean, I've been married for 21 years. So my wife is just awesome. And she's put up with me through all these changes. And ultimately, you know, the commitment I've had to her, and part of the lump, when I look at my resume, you know, I went back from being a VP of sales to being an alliance person. I was like, I'll get a job. I don't have a concern about that. Mm-hmm. So if for whatever reason, my current role doesn't work out, and the only thing available for me is carrying a bag, I'll go carry it back.
Yeah.
And I think that's where people might miss a little bit of it, right? Where they're like, I'm going to hold out forever for the VP of sales job. I interviewed every place. I talked to everyone. I did all those things. And through that, you understand what it is you're looking for, what it is you want, right? And you understand your value.
Well, that's impressive because, I think there's a lot of people that fall into the trap of where their ego can get in the way. And it was, I was so-and-so here before. And great, congratulations. But then you also have a responsibility in your life and you realize, okay, no, I have to provide. And I'm not so beyond doing this job here. And there's honor behind no matter what job you do. And it sounds like that's the mindset that you have there. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I had a lot of dark days. Don't get me wrong.
No. Yeah, I get it. But, your comment regarding, the firing part of it, I did an interview not that long ago where I said that the best day of my career was the day I ever got fired. And it was because had that. Now, at the time, of course, I did not think that at all. Not even for a second. I remember walking to my car. I was in a stupor. And they gave me this check not to come to work tomorrow. And I'm like, now what do I do? How much money do I have? Which was not very much. But then, of course, had that not happened, I would have never found Xerox. I would have never found sales, would have never found sales training. And I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. So in the end, it usually works out. And so it sounds like you have that same alignment there mentally as well, that you don't really want it to happen, but it usually can be a positive, if you look at it long term.
I can absolutely, without convincing myself, right, that where I am now, I can draw that line. I can pull that string through opportunities and I can look at the people I met, the things I did, and it absolutely led me where I was. And I also I know that I would not be as good of a person in the role I am in had those things not happened. Right.
Yeah.
So it sucked, but I'm glad it happened.
Right. You're better for it, right?
Absolutely.
All right. 2020, choppy waters. You're in your first year at this new company, and we're going through, I guess uncharted waters. The word seems to be unprecedented. That's a buzzword out there. But I've been using unique because it's the only PG word that I really, know how to use here. So share with us your first year at Risk Methods. How have you handled the last 6 months personally, professionally, You know, what's going on with 2020 for you?
It's been weird. So I remember, so two trips, I was actually up in Toronto in the end of February, and we were having a conversation. We're like, okay, is this like, what's going on? They just started locking down some of the stuff. And the meeting we went into, you know, a lot of hand sanitizer, all of that, but you definitely got unsettled when you were in the meeting, and you could tell that people weren't sure what's going on. And then the second week of March, I was in Louisiana, New Orleans, with one of my reps and our the woman that runs our technical consulting team. And we're in this conference room, and the people who we're meeting with are reading their computers, and they close the laptops, and they say, oh, if we had this meeting tomorrow, we wouldn't have been able to meet with you.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, why? And they go, just, you know, email came out saying, no more outside meetings. We went out to dinner. And that was when I was like, all right, you started getting a tickle in your back of your neck. You're like, this is weird. Like, we shouldn't be here, because everyone else was starting to panic a little bit. Then over the weekend, we closed down the Boston offices. We said, hey, everyone can continue work from home. And so I don't remember exactly what the date is. I'm going to call it March 11th. But that was the last time I was in our office in Boston. And it's been, I really like going out and meeting people and visiting clients. So for me, that's been a difficult part of the job. Recalibrating the team, the way we work, has been challenging. Fortunately, the team has been awesome. I'm not saying that just to say that. We've hired people, so we've increased headcount. The folks on my team, the people who aren't on my team, who are still part of the company in Germany and customer success and marketing, they were able to pivot, adjust to do things effectively. Part of it is, I believe, where we focus. So we're in supply chain risk. And what was one of the major things that happened? The supply chain went out the window. Yeah. So it gave us the opportunity to focus and be busy. And we were very, very lucky. And it's something that we talk about a lot. And going back in I think some of my LinkedIn posts, even, it was around just having grace and engaging with people and being thankful for where we are. And also for us to train, we don't require people to be in the office. We like to be in the office, which I think is an interesting dichotomy, right? And my philosophy is, if you create an environment where people want to go, they will want to come, versus if you say you have to be, they're not going to commit. And we've transitioned what might be perceived outside as silly things, but every day at 3 o'clock, we play Jeopardy on the Alexa, and we've transitioned that to doing it online. So we do it. And it's trying to maintain, I call them those touchstones that was of our every day-to-day life. Now, I don't do them as much, and you're not doing the casual walk to get coffee. And I understand all those things. Though I look, and I'm really proud of the team and the organization of where we're at. So if professionally things are a little bit more stable, it makes your home life a little bit more stable. And both of those are intertwined. For schooling with three kids, it's been a shit show, if I can say that. I mean, the schools are doing as best as they can. We are much better now, and my kids are off, and they've started. And my two oldest go to the same school, and they've started to transition one day a week. And then they'll be hybrid, which here in the States means a couple of days in, a couple of days out. And then my son has started that as well. And my wife has just done a great job of like coordinating additional tutoring in this. And without a doubt, we're lucky that we're living in a community in a town. You know, so the town we live in and the state we live in has taken it seriously. So our cases are really low, though we've known a lot of people who've had it. Our schools are taking it seriously. We're able to augment the learning for our kids. It's just been, it's that uncertainty of you just don't know what it's going to be, you know? And I think that's for a lot of people. And it's for when we talk with our customers, and I gave a customer presentation a month ago, and I said, hey, I'm at home at my kitchen table. I got a 40-pound golden doodle who, when someone's going to pull up, is going to bark. So just a heads up, this is going to happen. And of course, right in the middle of doing our product roadmap, and everyone starts laughing. Yeah. And then you hear the people in the background on the Zoom, their dogs start barking, right? So I think I'm giving you a bit of a long-winded answer here, but if you approach it where we're all humans and everyone's in the same boat, people get over it really quickly. If you start stressing that, oh my God, they'll hear my dog. Well, like, where do you think they are? Right?
So true. Man. I think about my first virtual training session this year, and we had been doing virtual for a long time, or at least we'd been offering it, I should say, but nobody really wanted it. It was all everybody wanted live in person as the preference. And then of course that was gone. So I remember doing my first virtual session this year in March, and I had my kids at home, and I was very conscious of, you can't come in here. I'm working right now. And they're only 6 and 4, right? Sure. And so, you know,
so they want to be in
there. Yeah, like try and tell a 4-year-old that you can't come in. And then what I realized when the first time my son Nicholas came in, and I had to manage that, I said, everybody, just bear with me for a second. Let me. He's too young to figure this out for himself. And I didn't want him to have a freak out right then and there. So I managed it. The notes in the chat box was, no problem. Take your time. It's all good. We're going through the same thing. And I realized, hey, wait a second. You know, yeah, I am the subject matter expert in the room. And yes, I'm the trainer. But I bleed red as well, and we're all in this together. And I took a lot of comfort in that. And it sounds like you're in the same, you know, boat as well with that. So good.
Yeah, you have to. And I'm sure from those trainings, people remember to be like, oh, remember that training we did with Paul and his son came in. And that's, and those are the relationships you build.
Yeah, I was told that it, I actually had a moment when I was addressing another session because my wife's a nurse. And so we've had to manage that this year. And I had a moment when I was going through the intros where I kind of cracked a little bit because my wife was in the front lines. And this is in March when, like, you know, you didn't know what was going on, right? And so I was quite concerned about her and COVID and, you know, what's going to happen here. And I had a moment where, you know, I was quite embarrassed by it because, no, I'm the sales trainer, I'm the professional, I got to get this done. And I had comments afterward that, no, that actually humanized you because, you know, how do you not have that reaction to these waters that we don't really even know how to navigate because there's no blueprint right now. So,
Right. Yeah.
Well, Bradley, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. I appreciate you allocating the time. 3 pets, 3 kids, VP of sales. I know you have, you're a lot on the go here. Last question for you. I always like to ask anybody who's a guest, if you had one piece of advice or feedback or anything that maybe has served you well and positive in your life, anything come to mind?
So there's a lot. I would say that ultimately you got to be true to yourself. And if you're true to yourself, you'll be true in your relationships with people, professionally, personally. And at the end of the day, look, no one's going to go in my grave and be like, oh, Bradley was a good VP of sales. It's husband, father, son, brother, you know. That's ultimately what's important. And I think if you lead with that, everything else is going to work out okay.
All right. Sound advice. You know what? I lied. I have one more question to you.
Okay.
I might be a glutton for punishment here, but
sure.
Are the Celtics going to pull this out?
No.
We can be friends as a Raptors fan. We're like, all right, good. We're all good now.
Yeah, no, I don't see them. They'll come far and they'll break our hearts.
All right. Well, anyways, hopefully not for your sake as a basketball fan. I felt, you know, in that Raptors series, while I was disappointed they didn't advance, I have a belief that they were the better team going into the series, but the Celtics were the better team during the series and they absolutely deserve to win that series. Absolutely, no doubt. When the series was over, I said, okay, it's fine. They lost, but the Celtics, they earned it. And they're in tough with the Heat. Man, the Heat have surprised me this playoffs. Oh my goodness. I can't believe they've lost one game.
I think so, right?
Yeah. That was the last one. So anyways, Bradley Pastor, so much. Thanks so much for being here. I've really enjoyed you sharing your story.
Yeah, Paul, thank you for the invite.
You're welcome. All right, everybody, let's wrap another one up right now. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result that you will tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week. Be safe, everybody. And for Bradley, let's go Celts.